What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, their families, communities, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. The Florida Coalition for Children, FCC, advocates on the behalf of Florida's abused, abandoned, neglected, and at-risk children. In addition, FCC supports the agencies and individuals who work with these kids while maintaining a partnership with child welfare service providers and community-based care agencies. FCC was originally called the Florida Association of Child and Family Agencies, FACFA. The member agencies care for nearly 50,000 children and families in crisis annually. These agencies provide critical services and programs to this vulnerable population throughout the state. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Kurt Kelly. Kurt is the CEO of Florida Coalition for Children.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. And Allison North Jones, Communications Director for the Florida Coalition for Children.
Good afternoon.
Thank you both for coming. We're just going to paint a picture with words of what you all are about, okay? 411 Teen recognizes your efforts and really applauds you in all that you do. But for those who are listening, who is FCC, Florida Coalition for Children?
Well, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. This is an organization. It's a group of professionals but it's beyond professionals. It's people who have a real passion and a concern for the welfare of children, children who have gone through some very difficult situations, in a situation where their families have problems, maybe drug and alcohol and mental health issues, and it's taken out on the child. And often what happens is these children become victimized. And when that happens, the state of Florida has recognized that in many cases, we want to provide services to try to keep that family together and to protect that child. But if that child is in risk or in danger, that child needs to be removed out of that situation. Mm-hmm. Then our organizations and many of our folks that we work with all across the state, their job is to come in and make sure that that child gets a great home, a foster home initially, and then looking for permanency through adoption and other processes in the future. So you're going to see that we have a lot of committed folks that love children and are there to help them during this time of crisis.
So what I hear you saying is we're talking about children who are living in some type of dysfunction, coming from some family dysfunction that they have to cope and deal with every day.
You know, you may have seen in the newspaper some of the articles, some of the things that whenever something happens, it really usually makes front page in the newspaper. Actually, I'm saddened when I read those articles, but I'm thankful that our society is still pained when children have been abused, abandoned, and neglected. And so our folks immediately jump right in. We work hand in hand with the Department of Children and Families. Okay. They will come in and make the decisions as to what needs to happen with those children. But as soon as they make those decisions, whether it's providing services and so forth, our folks are inside working with them to help them provide those services inside the family and coordinating and contracting with good professionals to come in and provide those services. But when the children need to be removed is when our organizations really jump into gear and making sure that we get good foster families and good places to place these children to truly meet their needs. Mm-hmm. So it's sad work in some respect.
Task.
Yeah, it's difficult work. But I think the folks that do this have an incredible passion and a real desire to impact these lives of his children. As Mike Carroll, the secretary of DCF, says, keep that light burning in that child. Mm-hmm. And so our folks are skilled and work very hard at that every day for this.
That's great. talk about the organization just a little bit and how it evolved. You know, I talked about how it had been FACFA and then it evolved into, you know, FCC. Would you share a little bit of the historical perspective?
I will. Thank you. Well, in the past, the way Florida did their child welfare is that the state, through the Department of Children and Families, would go out and find providers to meet some of these needs. Mm-hmm. They would go out there and try to find providers and so forth. Unfortunately, that was not an effective system, and Florida had some serious issues and some crisis that sort of really hit the state, and a lot of people began to look at it and saying there must be a better way. I must really applaud. This was a bipartisan effort, first started by a guy from my hometown, Buddy McKay, and Lawton Childs, saying, listen, we need to get the communities involved in child care. Government's good at being good at providing justice. At least that's what we hope, that they're a just society. But when it comes to care and compassion, it really takes the community to get involved. Governor Jeb Bush then came in and said, you know what? This is a great idea. I'm going to use my political credibility and to work with the legislature, and let's develop a not-for-profit privatized model. It's not-for-profit organizations that are out there working in the community to begin to provide these cares. Before the organization, we were just made up of providers.
Okay.
But today we have both providers and lead agencies, the organizations who are responsible in their geographic area to actually find the right providers and provide the resources and make sure that they're getting the whole community involved in this community-based care. You want to hear the good news?
Of course.
Here's the good news. We went from one of the poorest service provisions for children, taking care of children, mm-hmm. in the United States, mm-hmm. by many of the measurables. Mm-hmm. We were mediocre and poor in many areas, mm-hmm. to now considered one of the best in the United States. We're not there, though, yet. We mm-hmm. have a long way to go. Our providers realize that. Our community-based care organizations realize that. And we're constantly working with the legislature saying that we've not arrived. This is a journey to providing greater services to help our kids, and then to spend more time on the front end trying to keep these kids from coming into our system so that and work with the family so the children may not come into the system, to be able to provide prevention and intervention services. We're working mm-hmm. on a lot of those things today.
Now, Big Bend Community-Based Care, would that be one of the lead agencies that you work with?
That's correct. Big Bend Community-Based Care here in Tallahassee.
Great organization.
Great organization. Mike Watkins, our CEO, is just he's incredible. I built a real friendship with him. He is an important member of our organization. And there are 17 CBCs, Community-Based mm-hmm. Care. They're called lead agencies mm-hmm. across the state. But what's interesting for our organization is while I may have 17 lead agencies, I have three times as many providers. We probably have almost four times as many providers. We have mm-hmm. 60 or so providers now that are part of our organization. And then we have a lot of folks that are associate members and are very involved in this. We've been very blessed to have our community that works in this, not just a local community, but our community of child welfare across the state, has really engaged the Florida Coalition for Children's efforts, and we're seeing that paying big dividends in the legislature now.
That's great. That's great. Again, we commend you. Is there an avenue for agencies or groups to become involved or become a part or membership of your group?
Yeah,
what's the process?
Well, we have several types of membership.
Okay.
First of all, if you're in the child welfare arena and mm-hmm. providing professional services, then you can be a member. If you're contracting through one of our lead agencies and working with us, then you can be a member of the coalition. There's a process to do that. And in fact, we encourage everyone that is involved in this area to become a member. We provide tremendous resources. The reason I took this position several years ago was to come in and say, I'm kind of like the BSF, or what was the group that says we don't make the plastic, we make the plastic better. I don't do child welfare. The Florida Coalition, the organization itself, doesn't necessarily do. We provide the resources and the support and the collaboration and the cooperation and the information to provide our professionals so much information and support. We go before the legislature and advocate and strongly and educate them as to the good system that's working out there. We help bring best practices. We have folks from Miami to Pensacola, Jacksonville, and all in between. And sometimes one area found something that may work better. Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot of best practices and so forth. And then, of course, we have some really good times of being able to support one another, cooperate, encourage. Obviously, we're going to talk about our conference that we have coming up.
Yes, we're good to
And
that.
That's a good time when we all get together and do those type of things. But the coalition is intended to be there to be very, very supportive of the folks who actually day-to-day touch the lives of children.
How are you funded?
Well, it's all private funding. We do it through memberships. Mm-hmm. We do memberships. We do it through special events that we do. That's the other thing that I'm working on, is trying to expand our funding base outside of even Florida and bringing some national organizations in and so forth. We do not receive direct state funds. So we're an association for that matter. And we have a lot of good members who are engaging this.
Now, I know your headquarters are located here in Tallahassee. If someone is interested in obtaining info, more info, give us the context.
Well, thank you. And I would tell you to first go to our website, and that's a simple one to remember. Of course, www.flchildren.org. FL for Florida, children.org. And you will find out all that, and certainly it has a contact us and so forth. But let me allow you to have our phone number. Okay. Here in the Tallahassee Big Bend area, it's 561-1102. That's our office. We have an office right there on College Avenue, it's East College, 411 East College. We're there all the time. Many hours you can reach us. Mm-hmm. We'd love to have people come by and see us. We're out there to again as advocates for the folks who are advocating for children. That's my goal, is to have as many people come by and say hi to us as they'd like.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. I've been talking with Kurt Kelly, CEO of the Florida Coalition for Children. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this hour we salute the Florida Coalition for Children. FCC works with lobbyists, elected officials, child welfare advocates, and members of the public to monitor and affect legislation relevant to their members and the children and families they serve. Now, you have not said anything, Allison, but we're going to get your input.
Okay.
Allison North Jones is the communications director for the Florida Coalition of Children. Share with us just what that involves.
Well, as communications director for the coalition, it's important that we are helping advance the advocacy efforts of the coalition and making sure that there is consistent messaging across the board about the child welfare needs throughout Florida. As the representative agency or coalition, if you will, of more than 60, 70 member agencies, it's very that all have the same goal of advocating for Florida's abused, abandoned, neglected, and at-risk children and youth. That's a big undertaking.
Yes,
there's
a
lot to communicate. And our goal, though, always is to be consistent and make sure that we are the voice, not only for children and the needs of children and families throughout Florida, but also the agencies that are serving those populations that are at risk throughout the state. So there's a lot. I don't think we ever feel like our work is done in terms of communicating those needs mm-hmm. to the broader audience. And there's varied audiences. You know, we need to communicate with lawmakers so that they fully understand who they're coming to Tallahassee to provide funding for. There's the community-based care providers and the stakeholders in their individual communities. The needs of Ocala are very different than the needs
exactly.
of Miami. The
mm-hmm.
populations that they're serving are varied. And at the end of the day, though, what we want is healthy, happy families and children in safe, permanent, and loving homes. So the goal is always to make sure we're communicating about that and communicating to children and families that may be at risk and at need, making sure that they know what kinds of prevention and diversion services and are available to help them get on their feet. That's the whole beauty of the community-based care mm-hmm. system is that about 10 years ago, lawmakers in a bipartisan way decided that communities know what communities need and the families in those communities better than Tallahassee
That's
does.
That's great.
And so our goal is always to make sure we're communicating that moving forward and communicating with those audiences, but then also communicating with the varied audiences, the lawmakers, how important the funding is. And I think Kurt can probably talk to that better mm-hmm. than I can because he's been intimately involved. We've got legislators up here for a special session, and all they're talking about is how the state is going to dole out funding. Our system, the child welfare system, hasn't really received a funding increase in a decade. And yet the population of children has continued that are in need has continued mm-hmm. to increase. And so you're now asking for communities and agencies to provide a high level of service that we've come to expect out of the community-based care system without any kind of funding increase. But yet you have seen an increase in the number of children mm-hmm. in need and families, because that's the important thing. I think a lot of times, too, when we think about child welfare, you just think about children who are in need of foster care mm-hmm. or adoption. But what we do in our community-based care system is we also have really amazing prevention and diversion programs. So we are also helping families stay together, helping families get the resources that they need to stay together or get back on their feet, keeping sibling groups together. That's often, especially for youth, very traumatizing to be pulled apart. So finding ways that within the community we can really keep whole families and make sure that everyone's in safe, loving, and permanent homes.
Well, I think one of the things that I heard that was outstanding that you said is how you are sensitive to the various communities, because different idiosyncrasies, mm-hmm. you know, exist in different communities, and one fix doesn't deal with everything.
And
I think that's, you know, excuse me, but that's so often where agencies are lacking. They think we can go in and we can do this and it'll work for everyone.
Kurt's talked about that a lot this year, and I think he can get into that. But what we like to say is that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Mm-hmm. The needs of children and families in our child welfare system are just as diverse as the entire population of Florida, and we need to be respectful and mindful of that.
And Allison has brought such an important communication skill set across the board and getting this message out across the board. I often get to be the one that's the face and the out front person talking this. I was a former member of the legislature, so I know how to speak legislature ease, if there's such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what we've also done, and it's been one of the things that's been really heartening to me, is this is such a difficult task to do. Think about you're dealing with such difficult situations mm-hmm. they're going into, and we're humans, and there's a lot of pain that you feel that. And the one thing I think we've really done under Allison's leadership, and by the way, she's the first person I brought in. I said, I will need somebody who really gets this, is to be able to bring a sense of community, a sense of family to our organization. And so we're constantly saying, here's the good work that's coming out of Fort Lauderdale. Here's the good work that's coming out of Orlando. And a real encouragement from the CEO level all the way down to whatever level it could be, a support personnel in the office. But talking and putting a human face on the folks who are out there impacting the lives of these children. While we're doing that, we're also telling the stories of the children. because there's so many. You're going to read about the negatives.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you know,
of course.
That's what sells the newspapers. And like I said, I think there's a value that we're still pained by this.
Yeah, people but need to know what's happening.
They need to know that.
Yeah.
But there's also incredible success stories coming out of this. Incredible success stories. And so one of the things that I have to do is I find myself being a cheerleader, if you will, about the goodness of many of the folks who have done great things in this. Because otherwise you'll think that, well, gosh, we're horrible here and so forth. And
and
we're not. We have a really wonderful system. It's going to get better and it's going to continue to get better.
Of course.
The day that we don't ever have to talk about another child being abused, we're going to continue to strive to get better. And we're going to take that message to the legislature. We're going to take that message to Washington. I have to do a lot of things in Washington. But it's pretty easy when you get great folks like Big Bend Community Services and many of the stakeholders who work with us, all the different – the United Ways and the
judges.
The courts. And we just have so many great folks who are involved in this process.
Well, I know. I must admit I sit on the board of Big Bend Community-Based Care.
Okay.
So I guess I should say that. So
okay.
they're definitely doing a good job. The FCC Foundation, from what I understand, is the education and training and research arm of the coalition. And the Primary Educational Foundation is your annual conference.
Yes.
Yes. And we're going to talk about that. And I know another part of it is research.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to hear right now is just, where are you as far as research is concerned? What's your focus? What are you looking at? Share that with us.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll tell you, we've done some pretty exciting things in this. The field of child welfare has a whole lot of components to it, to being able to meet children's needs. One of the big needs is when we hire someone to be a case manager. And unfortunately, that's a very high-stress position. A lot of tough decisions are made there. And it's often considered an entry-level position for people coming out. Very few people go to college and say, you know, I think I'm going to come out and be a caseworker. And so we've had to really build that position to go in and work with these children, because that's where the real healing and processes take place. And we have them for months at a time to up to a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not too long in a year's process, but they're a critical component. Now, the reason I say this is we've been having a major turnover in that area. DCF has the same problem with their child protection investigators, their CPIs.
Very stressful job.
It's a very stressful – both of those are very stressful.
Very high demand.
So we went and conducted a first-class study, one of the first of its type, maybe the first of its type ever, and to actually say why would somebody become a caseworker? What makes us have a good caseworker? And we did about a year study, a fairly exhaustive study with major interviews and surveys of everyone that was in our system to talk with them about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was
really?
not an inexpensive proposition for us to do. But we came out of there with such important information and such valued information that, quite frankly, we're now building a process to help recruit folks based on all of that data. And so it allows us to get better people, better skilled folks, meet their needs, help them be actuated as individuals. And I've got a whole recruitment process that we're out there working on right now, having a video that explains what it means to become a case manager. And in fact, we just won an international award with that video. So a lot of positive things like – and that's just one example. I know that, by the way, the institute that has been established, the Child Welfare Institute at Florida State University, which is my beloved Florida State, which I graduated from, they're working with us on a five-year longitudinal study. So it's very exciting. We're doing these types of things. And this is stuff that's been needed in this field, but it's not been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so Florida's leading the way, and the FCC is involved in that to lead the way. Other educational things. One of the things that I'm going to spend a lot more time over the next couple of years is now working with providing some of the resources to working with some of our children as they're growing and maturing and showing them how to become great citizens. And I've started talking to the business community and so forth, and they get very excited about investing in these children's lives. And so there's a lot of great ideas that we're working on, things like that.
Yeah. I think another area that we addressed that was a huge area of need was facilitating a partnership between the child welfare system and the dependency court system, which anyone who comes into the child welfare system has gone through the dependency court system. And there's been a frustration for a long time that there is not any intersection and intercommunication between those two systems. You'll have caseworkers who are coming into a judge's courtrooms very prepared or very unprepared to the frustration of the judges. So about a year ago, we embarked on a partnership, a cross-membership, if you will, or co-membership with the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges. They are members of the Florida Coalition for Children, and we are members of their national organization. Kurt and I did a fly-in to Washington, D.C. with them earlier this year, but it's facilitated a very interesting dialogue here in Florida among the dependency court judges and those who are the frontline workers in the child welfare system, as well as with the child welfare system, having a better understanding of the dependency court system and what is expected of them when they go into a courtroom to represent children and families. And out of that, two things that we did that are kind of fall into the research component is we created a judicial guide for all of the caseworkers. A lot of times you have newer caseworkers who may have just come on the job and they have anywhere from 7 to 20 cases and children that they're responsible for. And they will often end up representing those children and families in the courtroom. And they were flying blind a little bit. They weren't really going in prepared and knowing what a judge, what kind of questions they're going to be asked, what kinds of items they were going to need to present in front of these judges. And these judges, some of them have sat in these dependency courtrooms for 20 and 30 years, so they have certain expectations. And the training just wasn't necessarily always there. So this judicial guide, there's more than 2,000 of them that have circulated among our caseworkers in Florida, and I'm getting increasing demand every day. So for more of those, we also, at our annual conference, created a judicial track where we will have continuing education units all throughout the conference, but the judicial track especially will offer an opportunity for individuals to come in, especially the frontline workers, those case managers, the child protective investigators, DCF, state agency, regional folks, to come in and sit down and meet with dependency court judges. We're having a judicial panel discussion, which will include Children's Legal Services, guardian ad litem, as well as several dependency court judges. And we also are going to do something really unique, and that has been quite an undertaking for the FCC and the dependency court judges who have volunteered with us. We are going to do a role play where we will be having dueling courtrooms, and we will have a best practices courtroom where everything is done right and to what the expectations will be. And then we're going to have a courtroom that's a little bit more realistic in what often goes wrong. Sometimes you'll get a very angry judge who's heard 18 everything cases that day, right, and they don't necessarily take the time that's needed to hear any one case. Or we'll have a caseworker who literally was given the case before they walked in the door and don't know much about the child or the family and can't answer a lot of questions. So what we are really working to do as the Florida Coalition for Children is provide the tools and the resources for those frontline workers, as well as that's the great partner stakeholders like the dependency court judges, so that we are all at the end of the day working to bridge that gap to make sure we're doing everything we can to serve the best interests of the children.
So everybody's on the same page, so to speak.
As much as we can get there.
As much as possible.
That is fantastic. I know a component of what you do is legislation, okay? And I know the currently governor signed, the Regis Little Act to protect children with special needs. My next question is, how do you address those children with special needs? And I know we're talking about a diverse group, but, you know, how do you address them?
Well, and there's a variety of issues. You just said a diverse group. I would say that in the process, when we start identifying the needs of those children, our goal, once we identify, and that's with the department and with our expertise, folks with expertise, we then will go out and find folks, mental health professionals, folks who, if there's autism needs and so forth, we will go in and work. And then really, this is what a case manager does. He literally begins to facilitate all of the concerns and so forth and start bringing all these different players in place. And then the community-based care organizations will then go out and contract, if needed, to go bring these services in. Mm-hmm. And so and by the way, just so you know, Allison, I hate to always talk about a little bit of money here, but the way that community-based care works is it's capitated. We get a certain amount of money, and if 50 kids come into care or 5,000 kids come into care,
you got to deal with it.
We're going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so it's always important. That's why you have to have top-level professionals like Mike Watkins and others at the helm making really good decisions about how the services are provided. But when it comes to the special needs area, we have a lot of good partners and a lot of good stakeholders that we work with that will help us, including the department, including guardian ad litem, including many other stakeholder and folks who are interested in these areas, including agency for persons with disabilities. And so we bring all of these stakeholders to bear into it. Again, one size doesn't fit all, even when it comes to us. And so we're constantly out there looking to bring everybody together. But those situations are difficult, and they're actually more – they're more or less unique, and actually probably more have more incidents than most people would know. And so we were very much supportive and very active and involved with Alan Abramowitz and his group, Guardian Ad Litem, to get this bill passed.
Let me ask you to hold your thoughts for 1 second, and we'll come right back to you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are having a dynamic program about the Florida Coalition for Children. We're going to take a brief break, but we will return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Kurt Kelly. Kurt is CEO, President of Florida Coalition for Children, and Allison North Jones is the Communications Director for the Florida Coalition of Children. Kurt, I had to interrupt you, but you want to continue what you're saying.
Oh, no, I guess to finish up the point is that I believe that the Regis Littlefield legislation that was really championed by Alan Abramowitz and Guardian Ad Litem and many of us that were involved is a sort of a shining example of what it means to have cooperation. With all of us, and we can get good policy passed. We worked on a major bill last year to make sure that we could continue to provide good services. When I served in the legislature, I always understood that you have to have good policy. And it doesn't usually come from just the legislators themselves, but it comes from people that are bringing these ideas and issues and concerns. It's been really interesting for me to be on this side and to work it and to work with legislators on good policy. But every time there's good policy, then there has to be the resources to implement this policy. And so we've been very thankful that we've had a receptive legislature the last year or so. Mm-hmm. Allison said earlier that, frankly, we haven't had any real new dollars put into the system over the last 10 years. In fact,
you've just been creative then, huh?
Well, that's right. Well, and efficiencies and, you know, and doing all of those type of things, which is good business principles. That's what communities
that's
can
what
do.
That's what it's about.
But, you know, when I came in the legislature in that year, 2007, And it was about the time the economy started going south. Mm-hmm. And I remember my first meeting, we were called in to start talking about how we were going to have to cut this year's budget. And the area I was working in at the time was about $1.5 billion. And that's difficult. And we were doing that across the board. For the next 4 to 5 years, they were taking money. There was no money coming in. Education was receiving less money. Well, child welfare actually had less money given to them. Mm-hmm. So we've been operating in a system that has gone from one of the worst to one of the best with less money than we started. And while that speaks to the greatness of the creativity and the engagement and business principles and just frankly the commitment of the people in child welfare, it speaks to them. Mm-hmm. It also shows that while they've done a great job, there's a point in time where we're going to have to raise the tide of funding. And so that was one of the commitments I made when I came here, was to begin to help that area. We still want to be as efficient and as effective and as accountable as possible, but we have gotten some really good partnership with the department and now with the legislature. The House and the Senate this year gave us the largest amount of money that we've had ever. With just $16.1 million, I could have asked for a lot more, well, but I'll take that.
Hey, you'll take what that.
And it's been a real dynamic process to watch them kind of get involved in this again. And so we're looking for great things over the next 5 years. But I would be remiss if I did not speak to Secretary Mike Carroll and the way that he has led DCF now. And partnered with us, and it really means a lot. And I would even go to say his boss, Mike can't do stuff unless his boss, Rick Scott, mm-hmm. says you need to support this area. And right. So we've been very thankful to that kind of partnership.
That's great. I know earlier we talked about prevention being one of the focuses, and I wanted to get an idea if you could share more about what direction you're taking as far as prevention is concerned, because we know prevention is the real key, okay? If we can get to it before it happens, okay, that's a big key. Of course, so often we're intervening,
yes.
You know.
The old, what's it, the Fram oil filter guy says, you can pay me now or you can pay me later.
Right.
And you can pay a little bit up front and mm-hmm. get into it. And we listen, if we started working with early learning, mm-hmm. working with healthy families, we start working with abused the mental health areas for folks that are involved in drug interdictions and areas of mental health. And we began to work in all of those areas together early on, recognizing the areas, stepping into areas that are impoverished, and start trying to go in and doing a tremendous amount of education and work up front. Now, by the way, many of our organizations are doing it. We really don't get a lot of funding. They want us to do this. We don't get a lot of funding for that. But we know that that's it makes sense to get involved in there anyhow. And mm-hmm. so I think as we just finished having a meeting with the Secretary's Assistant Secretary, Janice Thomas, to talk about next year's issues. And we're going to focus from 0 to 5 on and so we had all these stakeholders coming in, and we said it's time to break down the silos, start working together, and start trying to engage this area. Because frankly, when we do that, then I have less children who are being abused, mm-hmm. abandoned, neglected. Mm-hmm. And the expensive services that we have to provide on the back end, we've dealt with it on the front end. But more importantly, we've saved a life.
Yeah.
We've engaged a life.
Right.
I'll go one step further. As a citizen of Florida and a citizen of America, I do believe that our charge as a citizen is to care for these folks, to crown thy good with brotherhood, as the song says. And I do believe that as a leader of this organization, our intention is to get out in front of this stuff so that we don't have these children that are in abuse situations, or we've greatly reduced those numbers. So you're going to see a much more cooperation from all these stakeholders that we started mentioning. They're all getting it, and it's like this dynamic convergence that's starting to happen now, and I'm just excited to be a part of it and in some respects help lead it.
That's great. When I think about forthcoming projects, I know we're going to say, the annual conference. So let's talk, before we, because you all have so much valuable information. Yes, let's talk about the annual conference now, before I run out of time.
There you go.
That's a good way, like you're saying, if you like what you're hearing, and if anyone else tuning in likes what they're hearing, you can hear a lot more of it at our annual conference. And it will be June 29th through July 1st in Orlando, Florida. We have moved it from year to year, so I don't know if it will be in Orlando again next year or not. That's we do like that it's a more central location. So we try and keep it in a place like that. But the conference is really an opportunity for all of the stakeholders to come together. It's not just the child welfare providers in the state, but it's the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Juvenile Justice. It's all of our member agencies and our provider agencies. It's this year we're really focused on the caseworkers, the frontline workers. It's a celebration of them. It's a 3 days to network, to learn. Like I said earlier in the program, we have 2 days of continuing education units where folks can get some of those required units for their jobs. But we have plenty of people who are attending who don't necessarily utilize those credits, but certainly utilize the education that the programming over those 2 days provides. And really just the networking and the kind of sharing of best practices that organically happens at the conference over those 3 days.
I told Allison that there's three things I want to accomplish at a conference like this. I want to start with the number one and put it first. Fun. We've been working so hard all year long.
Good.
Come together.
Good.
Enjoy one another. We're a family. Come into this. Come in and see the great things you're doing. Let's have fun. To that end, we've had some great speakers. Leanne Toohey of The Blind Side. You know the story. You can't help but see the television show. They run the movie quite a bit. It's a heart-touching movie, but she's our keynote speaker. And it's a very exciting time. We have it at Champions Gate, which is a great place to relax. Start with fun. Secondly, educational. As Allison said, we have a major educational component in there that we will work on developing skill sets and forming and CEUs and all of that good stuff. And then the other one is just it's the collaboration and the best practices and cooperation stuff for the whole industry. And so we're very excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. We really encourage people to come down to it if they can make this. There's still some openings available. Allison is taking this on in her task and is just blown it out, and it's really exciting. But we would really encourage people to come to this. It's the place to be this at the beginning of the summer.
What's the contact info? How does one find out more?
The easiest way to find out is to go to conference.flchildren.org. All the information and background about the conference can be found there. Again, that's conference.flchildren.org. You can also register directly through that site. You can make hotel accommodations as well. It includes all of the education units. We're providing the full schedule for the 3-day event, everything from our plenary kickoff to our closing ceremony, if you will, which is an award ceremony where we're celebrating a lot of the folks who have put the work in, if you will, in the communities. And, of course, we'll have the keynote speaker there, Leanne Toohey, who is the inspiration behind the story, The Blind Side. And really, she is very much embodying what we're looking to do with this year's conference, which is remind everyone how impactful and important the work is that we're doing every day for the children of Florida. And one of the quotes from the movie that's really stood out to us as we were putting together the conference is, you're changing that boy's life. Someone said that to her at one moment, and she said, no, he's changing mine. And I think anytime you talk to the individuals who do this work every day, who are the frontline workers, and even Kurt, who gets to interface with the CEOs of these community-based agencies and provider agencies on a daily basis, we're all changed touched by this work. Whether we're directly sitting across from a child who we are helping to find a more permanent and stable life and loving home, or the CEOs who are employing the individuals who are interacting with those children every day, or even just walking into the legislature and making sure we're telling the story and we're getting adequate funding so that we can provide these services. We're all forever changed by that work that we're doing and driven by it, I think, is fair to say. So that's really kind of the inspiration we want to provide and the celebration that this conference is intended to do.
Liz, she tells us about changing lives. In another life that I have, we all have different hats. I like to write music. And we've got a foster children who have started a band, and so we got talking to them a couple of months ago, and we were talking about music and so forth. And I said, "Well, I ought to write you a song," and so I put one together.
I know they
we're
love
gonna,
that.
We're gonna see if we can pull it, debut it at the event by the pool. What's it called?
Is the party by the pool?
Party by the pool.
The first night.
First night, and we're going to try if we can get it together, and we're going to roll it out. But it's it was interesting to me as I was writing the song. I was trying to get into the mind of a child that's been abused, abandoned, and it's I came from such a great family. Mm-hmm. I don't know that world until I see it, and yet, and I worked with a couple of songwriters out of Nashville to get a few words down right here. And I think when I was going through it, I was saying, "Wow, this is incredible!"
That's great.
We're going to let the kids sing the song.
Well, I've attended your conferences in the past, so I know how thorough.
Well, we hope you attend this year as well. We still have a couple of days to register.
Go ahead and get your place.
Yeah, absolutely. We still have a couple days for you to register, and as Kurt was saying, it's going to have everything. The Next Gen Band is a band of foster and adopted children who are actually currently on tour, and they're taking time out of their statewide tour to come and perform at our conference alongside Kurt and maybe a few other special guests.
Well, we have legislators. We have a whole group of folks, a whole bunch of folks coming.
And so there's just things like that that you get exposed to and are have the opportunity to see here in the state of Florida as we work through the system. And the conference is kind of a showcase of that.
Well, you all do a great job. I mean, really, you just do a fantastic job. In these last few minutes, I had a couple questions I wanted to ask you. One was, can you talk about the Youth Villages program? Is it a Youth Villages program that I saw? I think it's a teen transition situation.
It's one of the provider programs.
As
Kurt and you have both mentioned earlier, we have many community-based lead agencies, but often the needs of those who come into care for those lead agencies, as you know, being a board member of Big Bend Community-Based Care, are varied, and the ages. I mean, we get children who are 3 days old.
That's
we get children who are 3 years and 13 years old, there are provider agencies that are contracted with, and Youth Villages is one of those provider agencies, and they provide residential and group home care. The needs of children are very varied. This is a current debate with the legislature, and certain placements aren't necessarily appropriate for every child. They don't blend as well. Sibling groups, which I mentioned earlier, sometimes that's really a challenge to split up a sibling group and put them in four different foster homes. So an alternative a lot of times is to put them in residential or group care where they can stay together. You also will have other children that have challenges and they haven't necessarily thrived in a foster or adoptive setting, but they have gone into something called Sheriff Youth Ranch, which is right up the road here. And it's a much more structured setting. The kids go in and they have a job. They're given a job from day one and certain benchmarks that they're expected to meet. And that structured environment just provides, especially for certain youth who have encountered just things we can't even imagine in our own lives. And that that structured setting and that camaraderie that can be built in a setting like that, because even if it's not siblings of theirs, there's other youth there who have experienced what they have, and just being supplanted into a foster home isn't necessarily the same experience. Mm-hmm. So youth villages, Sheriff's Youth Ranch, sometimes we will have
Boys Town. SOS villages in South Florida.
There's so many.
I can start naming them. Just incredible
and
organizations. And the children will thrive in the – and there may be different models.
Yeah. And it's like they say, different strokes for different folks.
And that's
what's really important.
That's right.
I think that you tailor it to the child's needs.
Yep. That's right.
You know?
It goes back to the diversity we were talking about.
But all of it at a high standard. Mm-hmm. We don't accept low standards. Mm-hmm. And that's an area that we've been talking about for foster families, for services that we provide, for the residential and group homes that are some of our folks that provide services there, that we keep raising the bar in the standards to actually meet those children's needs. And quite frankly, many of the children that are in residential and group homes, that becomes their family.
Mm-hmm.
In many
Indeed.
Cases. And they feel
that,
like it.
That is their family.
In fact, I sometimes get offended when somebody thinks that that's not a family, mm-hmm. because those kids, I would not treat those kids, speak lowly of those children. They love that environment. And so I think that you're going to see this coming year, there's going to be a lot of conversation in the legislature about this. And we're going to make a legitimate argument of why there's real value in these places.
Well, we applaud you. I know the ultimate vision of the Florida Coalition for Children is to see a system of child welfare in Florida that is fully resourced, well-managed, and fulfills the needs of our abused, abandoned, neglected, and at-risk children. Again, 411 Teen applauds you, applauds your efforts, and salutes your stamina, because that's what it takes. It really does. And many thanks to you. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.